conversations on life, style, beauty, and relationships. It's the Velvet's Edge podcast with Kelly Henderson.
I love that you just were closing your eyes, getting in your body, getting ready for this conversation. It's exactly why I wanted to talk to you, actually. So I was actually writing the outline for this, and it's funny because even when I'm coming to see you and we're doing a session, if I have to tell a friend like where I'm going, I don't really know how to explain what I'm doing with you.
I'm like, that means you're on the right track.
I'm like, I'm going to see this lady that I've been working with, and we do breath work. So I started calling you my breath work lady, which I don't even know what that means, but there's so much more to what you do. So can you help me navigate a description of the kind of work that you do, and even the stuff that you do with me specifically, because I want to talk about why that's been so helpful to my journey. But what would you say your description is?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's it always shape shifts, you know. Basically, you know, on my resume, I started yoga as a child, really. I was about 13 when I began the yoga path. And that was right in the midst of parents getting divorced. And I mean, it was just, there was so much undoing going on in my life that yoga became like a touchstone, like a survival thread. And my first teacher was, I would say, an earth angel. She was one of my mom's best friends, and mom and I both started doing yoga with her at that time. That was early days. So I'm a longtime yogi. You know, fast forward, became, you know, after waitressing and selling futons and tires and, you know, all kinds of various and sundry occupations going through school, I became a massage therapist. So kind of hands-on healing modality. And that morphed into a somatic transpersonal psychotherapy training, a four-year intensive training that I did in Boulder, Colorado, called ALIA Process. And it's a synthesis or an amalgamation of many therapeutic modalities. Breath work, we were trained in what's called Reikian breath work. Mm-hmm. There are many forms of, you know, trademark breathwork systems. There's holotropic breathing system by Stanislav Grof. There's what was coined rebirthing back in the day. All kinds of ways to basically help us reorient internally. And the breath literally helps us open the feeling body and the mental body. So the breath is that vehicle that brings us home to ourselves and, you know, allows us on the exhale to offer our lives, you know, in service, which, you know, whatever we're doing, whether we're, you know, cleaning the bathroom or doing the dishes or serving soup at a soup kitchen or teaching a yoga class or talking about adornments of the body and, you know, the path of beauty, it's all in service. And it helps, I think, all of us to think of our lives that way, in service. So the psychotherapy component added to, you know, what my roles and functions are. Some people, you know, it really depends on what people's intentions are, you know, how, if they find me on the internet, if their friends refer them, you know, on my website, there's kind of a bullet point list. It's like, why do people come see me? You know, for a long time, people come private yoga. I want a private yoga lesson. You know, I want some help with my postures and my asanas and my body. And, or someone might come with relationship issues. Someone might come just with low mood and like, how can I reconnect with my life force, my vitality, my joy, and even access my grief in a real way? So like, in a way, I'm a midwife. Some people call me a spiritual mentor. I don't really, you know, what do I call myself? I many names, you know, just don't call me late for dinner. But anyway, I love food. So, basically we all need helpers, and we hit times in our lives where we need specific support and help. And really, I'm a holistic practitioner. I'm a practitioner that encourages, supports, and invites an individual, groups of people, communities, families, couples, back to themselves, right? And cultivating that deep, inner, intimate relationship with source, you know, within the body. And it's a great, you know, in yoga is such a beautiful, perfect system that the goal is liberation. The goal is freedom. Mm-hmm. And the Sanskrit word for that is moksha. It's a really beautiful word. And what does that mean? What does freedom mean? What does it mean to live a life in freedom? Freedom of thought, freedom of action, freedom of emotion, freedom of choice, you know, about what we take in our body, what we don't take in our body, who and where is the ultimate authority, you know, of living in alignment with divine, with our own spirit, with who we truly are.
So. Oh, I could not have said those words. That was so beautiful to me. This is why I'm saying to you, I don't know how to put it even into a box, because every time I come to you, we have a completely different session, you know, and it is very dependent on what's happening in my life, how I come to you. There's certain days I've come to you in such an anxious state that I can't get out of my head. And, you know, I've talked really openly with you about all of the therapy work I've done, all of the 12-step work I've done, and all of those things have been extremely helpful to me, and none of it is for nothing, you know. But I have found that where I am in my journey right now, what has been missing is just this mind-heart connection. And so it's like I get really stuck in my mind. And when I show up at your house, the thing that has been the most beneficial to me is that the first invitation is always to just stop, pause, and breathe. And you and I will just breathe together until we can get to this place of like, okay, where do we go next? Like, what is my journey that day? Or what is the thing that you can help guide me with? And it has been a spiritual healing of many capacities. But I want to talk a little bit. You mentioned somatic therapy. And I do think the reason you're so special is because you have so many different qualifications. And so you can meet people where they need to be met. The psychotherapy comes into play with the ability to converse about, you know, certain dynamics. You mentioned relationship struggles. And for me lately, it's been that, but it's also been losing myself because life has changed and navigating the grief of that. And then also how I want to move forward. And I just want to know, like, what do you think, if you could explain to people, maybe why breathing is even important? Because I think for many years I like heard that and I'm like, oh yeah, I know, meditate. Yeah, I should go meditate. Or like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just sort of like this. Yeah, I know. Okay. I hear you. I should go meditate and that's going to help me stay calm. And it's just like, if you sort of have that mentality, meditation sort of feels like bullshit. It's sort of like, okay, all I do is sit here for 10 minutes and I try to listen to an app, or I sit here and I just sit and ruminate about all the thoughts that I'm, you know, needing to go control or fix. And so what's been the bigger thing that's shifted for me with the work with you is it's so focused on breathing. It, like, you always just say that is your life force. That is the thing you have with you all the time. And it's not just like this word meditation. Mm-hmm. So why is breath specifically so important to our bodies?
Nice. Thank you for that question. breath, respiration, you know, The word spirit or spiritus is actually within the word respiration and breath. There's a beautiful book out, a newer book called Breathe, and Nestor is his name. And it's not, he doesn't present it as a yoga practice, but his, in the intro to the book, he talks about free diving, which means going in down deep in the ocean with no tank, with no equipment. And you learn literally to hold your breath. I mean, some people, there was a big hoopla about my octopus teacher. It was a beautiful film that came out. And this man, I think it was South Africa, where he free dove and became intimately connected to this octopus. And if you haven't seen the film, you got to see the film. But tracking back, what is breath? Why is breath so important? Breath is, you know, I look at breath as a vehicle, like a chariot, like the horse and buggy or the Maserati, right? Whatever your choice is, that brings us into the body at birth, right? Okay, first the embryo is in the womb, and you know, you're almost more like, you know, in water, you're living in water through the umbilical cord, through the nourishment and respiration, life force of the mother. You know, and then you're boom, you're suddenly out in this three-dimensional life, and the cord gets cut, you know. And at first there's this, will it make a sound? Will it live? Will it breathe? And then you hear this. It's like that through the breath, through the vehicle or the current, the wave of breath, we're brought into this body, into this life, onto this planet. And if you've ever been with a person, a dying person, these are both holy moments. These are both transition moments. And, you know, when that last breath goes out, you know, the body falls, the body goes back to dust, back to the, it's a returning. And yet the spirit or the breath carries us, maybe merges us with the great cosmic beyond, the infinite, eternal consciousness. Maybe that happens. But the breath is like that. It's like the lifeline when we're drowning in the ocean and somebody throws us the life preserver, and it's the rope. It's like the umbilical cord. It's like what the gift that's given to us to reconnect within our source center, our sovereign source center. And so why wouldn't we worship that, or, you know, revere that in a way that's not just, oh, well, go meditate, it'll calm you down, or go try this technique or this technique. It becomes the relationship with the breath, especially as a bhakti or from the shakta tradition, divine feminine tradition, it becomes lovemaking. It becomes likened to being with the beloved. That spirit shows up through the breath, through the vehicle of breath. And we're given that gift every time we receive the breath, like sunlight. In, fill, hold, exhale. That could be my last one. I don't know, but probably not, because here comes another wave. It's like, oh, I gotta stay here. Like, I gotta keep, you know, chopping wood and carrying my water and doing the human work, the tapasya, the fire, the work of life on earth, the human hard stuff by the grace of the wave of this breath that carries me to the meditation cushion or to the yoga mat or, you know, to the soup kitchen, into the prisons. It carries us, it takes us, it's our vehicle. And the more, you know, in the great tantric tradition, we talk about the breath as like solar and lunar energies coming together, right? Which in yoga, the hatha yoga means sun, moon. Yoga means union or unified field of freedom, of liberation, right? And we talk about those oppositional energies coming together and creating, you know, an inner climate where we cultivate this peacefulness within us so that we actually have the space to tolerate the mayhem and the chaos and the madness of the world, you know, especially, you know, in these times right. where so much is dying and being discombobulated and falling apart. There's so much loss and so much grief. And simultaneously, there's this consciousness rising, this, you know, we're becoming more aware that we literally are beings of light, you know, not to kick darkness out of the bed, you know. we bring in the night, we bring in the moon energy as well. And especially during the winter season, you know, lay a pandemic on top of the winter, you know, quarantining, illness, dis-ease. We need so much more rest to kind of wrap in our warm comforters and with warm tea and rest and slow down. And, you know, meditating, you know, meditation is one of the eight limbs of Patanjali's eight limb system of yoga, which, you know, in America, so many people signing up for 200 hour teacher trainings and 500 hour, 300 hour, these teacher trainings. And so you learn that there are actually eight limbs of yoga, and asana, which literally translates to seat, which all the posture flow leads us to the seat where we, dharana, we begin to focus our energies, and by grace, we are delivered, dropped off in meditation, or, you know, a state of samadhi. You know, there are many levels and states of samadhi, or the absorbed state. And, you know, so in the West, we have, as we do in the West, we overemphasize the outer. So starting with the body, going, just walking into a yoga class, you know, if there's a teacher that's connected internally, he or she is going to invite you to breathe. Here we are back to the breath, the starting point of reconnecting within ourselves, which that relationship and cultivating that intimate relationship expands our capacity to remember to return to that place over and over and over in the course of a day, of an ordinary day, going about our business, running errands, you know, going for work, going for a lunch appointment, going for a happy hour, you know, calling the plumber. It starts to welcome us. We remember more often. They say, you know, the great sages say the highest yoga is remember to remember. It's like, oh, what is that? Remember to remember what? Yeah. It's like, oh, breathe. Pause. Exhale. To the bottom, bottom, bottom of the exhale. Wait, wait, wait. Not no, not no, not no. You know, breath comes in, listening, feeling, and responding, you know, and we that quality of peacefulness begins to emanate into our relationships, whether they're intimate, whether it's our beloved, our husband, our wife, our girlfriend, boyfriend, our intimate friendships, our casual friendships, our work friendships, our communities, you know, family, community, global relationship, nation to nation, you know, it's like this makes a difference.
Yeah.
Our little individual, small little speck of a life can add to more loving existence, and hopefully raising our consciousness to care for our minds and our bodies and our spirits and each other, you know, in a way that's rebalancing through this really intense dark time. Yeah. So I'm a little bit of a meditation converter, you know, preacher woman, you know, I'm a kind of a music minister. My daddy was a Methodist minister, civil rights activist. Anyway, I know now I'm segueing. I'm gonna serve the ball. You, this is how I get. I'm like, don't get me started.
Oh my God. Well, I want to just touch on something because this is, I think, one of the biggest realizations that I've had about breathing. But I mentioned earlier, you know, like, I feel like I have a lot of knowledge because I've done so much work around certain topics. And what I have realized over the last year, just after, like, I think I just had a lot of traumas happen. And I think a lot of people, like you said, have had that experience over the last couple years. Mm-hmm. And I remember coming to you the first time and not even realizing how much, you know, I was trying to tell you my story. I'm just like the talking. I'm like, here's what's happening. And again, I'm stuck in my mind and I'm stuck in that quote unquote knowledge that I know. And you invited me to pause and breathe. And what I didn't realize, and how basic this sounds, is I was just walking around holding my breath all the time. And I still catch myself doing that a lot, especially in times where my life is chaotic or I'm having a hard conversation or I'm scared or I'm going through pain. You know, like, there's a lot of moments where I'll just finally kind of be able to connect back with my body and get out of my head for a second because of the things that you've taught me. And I'm like, oh my God, my body is clenched. It's just like tight. It's, I don't know, I'm breathing obviously because I'm alive, but I'm not really breathing through my body. And so essentially what that ends up feeling like is being majorly blocked. Mm-hmm. And one of the other things you always say to me is love present? You ask me that question over and over and over. And when I'm in my fear, or I'm coming to you with a problem, it's the first thing I forget about what is happening within my body, what is happening in my soul, is that love is present at all times. And for me to be able to give that away, I have to be in my body, in my breath, in my heart, and connected to that to be able to offer it to anyone else or to the world in general. And so that is what it's done for me. And also what I think I would want to say to the listeners that maybe are just like, okay, here we go, talking about yoga and woo-woo shit and, like, you know, just like, let's go meditate. Of course that's what she's bringing. I'm like, it's so much more than that. And I don't think that we do ourselves any favors by trying to just get knowledge for the mind without connecting it to the body, because that's what I've done for many years. And I still repeat the same patterns because of it, because I don't connect to my love and my inner knowing in the same capacity that I do when I connect with my breath. I actually found this article on yogabody.com that I wanted to ask you about, but it said you can go for weeks without food, days without water, but only a few minutes without breathing. Breathing has such an immediate impact on your mind and body that even the act of inhaling versus exhaling affects your nervous system differently. It's common to train in diet, exercise, and even hydration, but almost no one trains their breath, which is a huge missed opportunity for health seekers. So they were just talking, and they go through then, you know, all the different things that breathing does to your blood pH and, like, alkalining your body, just your nervous system in general, your digestion, which you always ask me about. And we do a lot of yoga movements and breathing to kind of help with that, because that's another thing that really gets blocked for me when I'm gripping and holding on to stuff. The rapid pulsed breathing, like last night I was having an intense conversation and I realized I was holding my breath, doing the thing, and my heart was like just beating. And I had to stop, and I, like, literally hear your voice, is love present? Is love present? And I just breathe in all the fear that I'm feeling and breathe out love, because it is present within me. It talks about just in reducing insomnia, stress, anxiety, overwhelm. So anyway, I guess, again, the question is not how important is breathing, because we're seeing this, but the nervous system in general is so affected by all of this stuff. How have we missed this point? You know, like, why are we just now getting, or why am I just now getting to the place where I'm like, hey, you know what might be important to do is breathe. Why is that in our culture?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, takes us a while. Yeah. Takes a while to wake up. And sometimes outer circumstances and our suffering levels have to get high enough mm-hmm. where we want it, where we feel like we're going to die if we don't find a different way to be in our bodies, in our minds, and in our lives. Mm. It's kind of the human journey, you know, it's like it's got to get bad enough where we want to make a change and we actually become willing. You know, we're not just unconscious in our old patterns, which can sabotage our health and our vitality and our deep sense of well-being. Yeah. And it's gotten to that point. the outer world, really, you know, the devastation out there, you know, along with climate change and the earth changes and, you know, all of that, you know, adds to our fear, you know, and fear, you know, creates contraction. Like you mentioned several times, the tightness, the constriction. Yeah. Yeah. And when, you know, when the fight or flight response, you know, from the reptilian brain starts firing, you know, our survival, we're in survival brain, survival mode, everything contracts and the nervous system is activated, the adrenals, the kidneys, everything's on full on activation. And sometimes we're aware of that and sometimes we're not. We just keep right. on going. We just stay on our devices and just push through and have a few more cocktails. You know what? Yeah. Not to diss cocktails, but you know what I mean? We've got totally. All of our favorite ways to medicate fear. I don't know, you know, that constriction. So when life presents itself in such a way that we can't manage our unconsciousness anymore, we can't stay unconsciousness, we start reaching out, you know, whether it's to a friend or Google or, you know, the search, the flame in the heart kind of starts waking up internally. Mm-hmm. And then we're led, you know, our life becomes following this breadcrumb or having this discussion with this friend who tells us about this person. And you know, the basic components of breath, you know, it's however you slice it, most likely it's going to be helpful, because it's not like we're not breathing. If we're not breathing, we're dead. Right. We're not here. Right. Okay. So what's the difference?
Right.
Unconscious breathing or conscious breathing. And when we bring in that consciousness, that self-aware, humans are the only species that we have this self-reflective capability. We can reflect back upon ourselves, and that's consciousness. So we go, oh, so I'm going to designate 7 minutes to sit on my mat and practice conscious breathing. And then if we do that, that builds to 10 minutes and it starts to that space of peacefulness, just the quality of peacefulness begins to spread into our lives. So we want more, like it awakens the longing in our heart for more, mm-hmm. you know, the bhaktis and the Sufis and the ecstatic mystics talk about, you know, the intensity of this longing, Rumi and Hafiz and Rabia. You read some of that poetry. I mean, even contemporary writers like David White and Mary Oliver, you read theirs, and it's this longing and the immersion in the natural world and realizing that this life is more than what we focus our eyes on out here. And the big transformation, the big change, the turnaround is that we stop looking out here to doctors and healers and not to say we don't need our helpers, we do, but the helpers that are worth their salt and their paychecks are helping us access that within ourselves. And so sometimes, you know, our lives have to get painful enough and hard enough where we're just like, holy shit, something's got to change, you know, and who can help me? Cause I don't have a clue.
Yeah.
That humbling moment where we realize this way, this old way is not working for me any longer. I'm dying, you know, and maybe I got cancer. Maybe I got COVID, maybe, you know, whatever the, you know, dis-ease begins, you know, in the subtle body. And then eventually if we don't tend to it, you know, the tension or constriction is a great indicator that I need to pay some internal attention to myself, to feel and ask, to breathe and feel and ask and wait and listen, receive that guidance from within. And we start to trust that process more and it becomes, you know, it weaves itself into our ordinary day as well as into our extraordinary peak cosmic experiences that, you know, occasionally we have out in the jungle somewhere or, you know, in our living room or so it really, you know, we need each other. We and love really, you know, unconditional love, the vibration of love is, you know, as we keep practicing, you know, we with the help, we develop some sort of, people call them spiritual practices or yoga practices or whatever. But we stay with it. You know, we get bored. It's like, this shit's not working anymore. I'm going to do something out. You know, it's like, once we get it, that coming to the same spot every day, or twice a day begins to build a charge in a certain area. And sometimes even if the mind is still going and going, but if we remember to bring some consciousness to the breath and consciousness with the exhale, consciousness, inhale, and, you know, even playing with resting or pausing in those gaps, you know, down there at the bottom of the exhale and simply noticing. It's like, it's all happens by grace. We bring our intention, you know, that's our GPS. That's our inner GPS, is the fire of our longing in our heart. And maybe it's just to feel better or to, you know, just really simple. It doesn't have to be some elaborate intention for, you know, to turn into an earth angel, but you know, they're everywhere. We run into them checking our groceries out or, you know, we're out there and we're in here.
Yeah, I was just having this thought as you were speaking, but one of the things that comes up for me when I do the work, either with you or the stuff you've taught me and I take it home to myself, is I can connect back into my body enough to go, this too shall pass. So no matter what's happening in my life, it's like that moment of, this pain is okay. It's teaching me something. It is usually bringing me to some new awareness or new practice in my life. Mm-hmm. And life is okay with pain. I think we live in this culture that's just like, no pain. And if you get to a place of pain, you want to medicate it away. And I'm just as guilty as everyone else with that because I don't want any pain in my life. And so we each find our different medicators or drugs of choice for that or whatever it is. And I think it's really been an important part of my process lately to realize the pain serves a purpose and it's here and I'm going to be okay. Like, the pain isn't going to kill me. Love is still present. I'm still breathing. And settling into that calmness amongst the storm is sort of one of the things that the breathing has like brought me to, or can bring me back to, even within my day, you know, like I said, it's like I have this voice of yours in my head all the time now. And so even when I'm going about my day, it's just, is love present, or I'll feel my body get so anxious. And I didn't realize how much I'm even walking around just day to day doing that. And I love what you mentioned about, like, we in the Western culture just look so much to these external things, like even yoga, right? Like, let's go to a yoga class. And for me, it's like a hot yoga class that does help because of breathing, but it's also like, oh, it's just going to make, I'm going to sweat a bunch and I'm going to get really toned too. And it becomes about that a lot of times more than like the modern day yoga classes that we do. A lot of times can become more about that than the internal things that we could be learning from yoga. So you mentioned bhakti yoga. Will you explain to people the difference of the different types of yoga?
Sure. I mean, according to the Vedas are, you know, ancient scripture, over 5,000 years old. Of course, there's the tantras also that are a little bit newer, but according to the Vedas, there are four paths of yoga. One is Raja Yoga, the king of yoga, and under that path of yoga, Hatha Yoga, Patanjali's eight limb, which falls into, you know, asana, posture. You know, within that system of yoga, you know, they talk about the five sheaths or layers, right, which you and I have talked about. And the physical body is the outer layer, which is a good place to start, the food body. And then it goes all the way, you know, the anamaya kosha, or the food body, physical body, and then the mind, emotion, prana body, actually, pranamaya kosha, which is the subtle body, the breath body, which is, people have heard of chakras and the pathways where breath travels. That's the pranamaya kosha. And mano maya kosha, the mind emotion layer. Yeah. And jnana maya kosha, which is the higher intelligence layer. And the jiva, the individual. Oh, just before that is the anandamaya kosha, which is the bliss body. So it's like layers of an onion. Yeah. So the physical body is a great place to start, but it's an entry door, you know, to our sovereign source center. Okay. So that's Raja Yoga. It means king, right? Okay. And then there is Jnana Yoga, which is the yoga of knowledge, which, you know, there's so many beautiful yogic and tantric scriptures to study. Swadhyaya is called self-study, and to, you know, just immerse ourselves in the study of it that helps brighten the mind. You know, it helps alchemize from the egoic, I know this, to the, you know, leads us to the higher levels of intelligence. That's more that intuitive, that wisdom flowing. So Gyan yoga, karma yoga, which is karma's action, the service, the yoga of service. So in a way, you know, nothing doesn't get to fit in that category. You know, no work is more holy than another work if we're offering it in sincerity to divine, to love. You know, some people don't relate to the word God or divine or goddess, and whatever works for you, you know, tenderness. Some love doesn't work for everybody either, because then it's like, you know, all their attachments and human betrayals and heartbreak comes into that. And which all needs love and tension. And then bhakti. Bhakti yoga is the yoga of, it's devotional yoga. It's the yoga of love. And in bhakti yoga, we do a lot of singing and we do a lot of dancing. And that's why I love it. You know, I grew up with being a musician and dancing and theater and play and all the creative ways to express this life. And, you know, that's another reason people come and have sessions with me, you know, because, oh, I have a block in my writer's block, or I want to really heal in my voice, you know, and become more comfortable and settled with this sound, this voice that comes through me that people have told me, don't sing out loud, like keep it in the shower, or, you know, there's so much wounding around our innate gifts. And, you know, that's where that outer can become a little, you know, more wounding, and we reconnect with the inner, and it helps us go, well, I'm just, you know, I'm just human. and I am so imperfect. And sometimes I sing and I sound like a squawky mouse. And sometimes the sound comes and it sounds like angels, you know, trumpeting in the heavens, you know, and it, you know, people come for some healing around this, you know. So, and also body image, you know, yeah, dancing and moving, and it helps from the inside to realize whatever shape my body's in is the way it is, and love can move through that. When I take a deep breath, even though I've carried years of self-judgment and, you know, my body's not this way, and the way we compare with better singers and actors and models and the, you know, the entertainment industry, you know, our idols, and, you know, the bhakti yoga helps to cultivate the inner longing in our heart for that merger with God in life. And we use mantras in bhakti yoga. Mantra, basically M-A-N, means mind. And tra means traverse, travel, transcend, deliver, liberate the small self mind, alchemizing into pure consciousness and the mind that we're all connected to, you know, the one mind, one heart, you know, back to Bob Marley, Bob and Ziggy, you know, love is my religion. And not in a Hallmark, airy-fairy way, or a, you know, spiritual bypass, you know, bypassing our pain, because really it is, as you say, through our pain actually becomes like a portal. If, as we become willing, and we need helpers for this, because the reptilian brain wants to jack us into fight or flight, away from danger or hurt. And some of that's really valid. You know, it's like if a bear is chasing us, we might run. We might run up a tree or find some other way, you know, because sympathetic, parasympathetic nervous system gets activated in that way. And there are, we do need techniques, and we have to practice techniques to realize, oh, I'm actually safest inside here, rather than averting or running away from the pain. It's like, oh, ouch. Whether it's a pain in the knee or a physical pain that's already, you know, in the hip, or a headache, or whether it's, you know, our mother just died, whether it's huge, devastating grief, loss,
yeah,
a breakup of a boyfriend, emotional pain, mental pain, you know. And there's a beautiful, I think you and I have practiced an ancient meditative technique called Tonglen, T-O-N-G-L-E-N. Yes. And the Buddhists, there are many Buddhist teachers that teach this very effective alchemical meditation. It's pretty simple. Basically, you know, my teacher, one of my teachers teaches it called receiving and giving, you know, to breathing into our own pain, into the thick, claustrophobic, sticky ick, and breathing out spaciousness, light. We start with our own pain, and then we have a friend that's suffering from cancer or from heartbreak or for whatever. And we bring that being in front of us in sincerity, and we breathe their pain into our own pain, dark into our own dark. And we exhale spaciousness and light. And suddenly, you know, this is the alchemy. And then groups of people, immigrants, the earth, you know, we can get as big and global and cosmic with it, or as teeny tiny as I just stubbed my freaking toe and it's killing me. We just breathe into it instead of running away from it, and then it swells and da da da. If we breathe right into it, I bet you I find that the healing happens much quicker. Yeah, so it's a great, and it's a lifelong practice. It's not, yeah, like, oh, I got this.
Right.
The minute we were like, oh, I got this, then boy, we've lost it, basically.
Well, that's been my experience for sure. I want to quickly touch on the fact you brought up singing and dancing. And recently, my friend Mary and I came to a workshop you were doing over a weekend, and we were laughing with you about, oh my God, if our friends could see what we are doing. I mean, we're literally in this room with random people we've never met chanting and dancing around the room. And, you know, there's two ways that can go. I think a lot of us really want to kind of clench up and be like, it's really hard to let your body just flow. And, you know, I think we can all kind of be like, this is silly, or I feel silly, I feel ridiculous, and we hold ourselves back. And yeah. One of the beautiful things about just releasing yourself to whatever it is, to the chanting, to the dancing, is it is true freedom when you do. And it's like the most authentic I think I ever feel, because there's just like, there's no walls, you know? But you've taught me a little bit about, with the chanting, and the reason a lot of religions even practice this is the vibration in our body that it brings. And we always end practices at your house with ohms and all of the things that, you know, maybe Western society makes a little woo-woo, but it is a part of getting back in your body. And dance is a part, like, you know, the moving, the flow of our breath through our body. And also just for me, it's realizing what movement does. So can you speak to that, why those two things are so important, and why you incorporate those into your practices or what you've learned from them?
Thank you for that question. Yeah. I mean, so many of our indigenous cultures, like if we start tracking, where did we come from? And Indian lineage, African, Aboriginal, we start going back to the more earth-based cultures in history. We find that this sounding or calling or singing, chanting, dancing, group the Polynesian cultures, you know, you think hula dancing, you know, you think of the little, you know, hula skirts, but if you really go into it, these are transformational ways of joining together in community to grieve and to celebrate. And as we will find out, you know, in the course of our journeys, there's a very fine line between grief and joy. It's actually just two sides of the same energy, right? Only the grief and the loss are that we will tend to push that away with the pain category, and we'll gravitate toward the joy side, the positive side, which can lead to extreme addictive patternings, right?
Yes.
So, you know, we take our clues and our hints from those earth-based lineages, and the bhakti tradition is no different than that. You know, the Sufis, you know, the mystical traditions of all the major religions on earth incorporate some measure of singing, chanting, sounding, calling, zikr, movement with sound, you know, and it joins us, it reconnects us to our source center within, it reconnects us with each other, it reestablishes our connection in family and community, and extends to all of life that which is, and it's freaking fun. I mean, and it can be terrifying and embarrassing because we're so self-conscious, because like I said, in our developmental, in the, you know, Western world, in our, you know, nuclear families, we're taught that this is okay and this is presentable and this is not okay and this is not presentable. And you'll see, you know, lots of retreats and workshops on rewilding and, you know, shaking that stuff off. And it's not so easy. I mean, those deep self-conscious patterns are based in trauma and woundedness. So we actually have to begin to enter our own pain in order for that alchemy to heal, and being willing to just be foolish and play. When we were five, did we go, well, if I move my hips like that, I might, you know, that person might not like me. You know, we don't, we just, we roll and we tumble. And it's like, that's how the rishis did. That's how the early sages came up with the triangle pose and upward dog and downward dog. They, in their ecstatic states of just rolling around, their playful states, you know, they came, these poses and things were presented. So in my experience, that singing and dancing, in, you know, under the auspices of bhakti yoga, and I know in my own personal life, you know, with theater and dance and music in those early, you know, as a little girl, hitting a point where it's like, oh, I got to be the best at this, or I'm going to die, or I won't have love. I won't have, you know, and the competition and comparison aspect of going into those fields, the creative fields, which turns into the entertainment industry, can be so wounding that we shut down on ourselves and we go, you know, get really, really small. And, you know, anyway, so it's an incredible way to wake up and be together and rejoice in, you know, our losses and our successes. Mm. And it really is. We just keep doing it. You know, we're embarrassed. We feel, oh my God, you know, because we've been embarrassed. We've been humiliated.
Yeah.
We've had teachers that call us out if we got the answer wrong. And we all have these kind of perfectionist structures in us that keep us hiding and holding back for fear of being, not being loved and not getting what we need to plump out and just like be just like I am.
Yeah.
So it's a wonderful way to cultivate our creative energy, you know, and sound. If we go back to some of the creation stories, you know, the Big Bang, and I mean, it's all, you know, silent sound, stillness movement, you know, those opposites along, you know, that fall to either side are about the life cycle, the birth, maintenance, sustaining, and death, destruction, dissolving back to the earth into winter, spring, summer, fall, winter. Here we are, you know?
Oh, I love that. I could listen to you talk all day. It's so calming to me. Well, I think you know this, but I want everyone to come see you, obviously. Uh-huh. And I'm like, this, I can't say it enough how much working with you has changed my journey. And so thank you, because I do believe you have a gift. I think you're one of the most special people I've ever met.
Oh.
And you use it to help people, which is why I just am like, everyone go see Amy. Oh. So good. But so if people are listening, and I know not everyone is in Nashville, so they won't be able to come to your house like I do, but if they would want to find you and maybe even start a journey into this kind of practice, where can they find you?
Yeah. My yoga website is amybarnesyoga.com, AmyBarnesYoga.com. And so my email, amy@amybarnesyoga.com. Great way to reach out to me. If you need to buy a house, I'm also a realtor. I have to say my movegracefully.com is how I pay for all this.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, it's all about finding home, right? Within. Yes. So that Move Gracefully just sort of integrates the yoga and real estate. But, and you know, in the pandemic times, I'm actually, since this last variation, I'm actually seeing clients on Zoom again.
Oh, good.
So yeah. So I'm definitely available for 60, 75 or 90 minute individual sessions on Zoom right now. Mm-hmm. When the weather gets warm, if you're local, I live on a couple of acres here in Kingston Springs, Tennessee. It's really beautiful. Yeah. And as you know, I like to have sessions on my screen porch so you can hear the water and the birds and the elements are supporting and, you know, providing all the background music to our healing sessions. So,
Yeah. So, and I just want to say this to people because I believe that I was a person, like I said, when I, you know, everyone's like, oh, go meditate, ugh, whatever. I just am like so annoyed by it mostly, more than anything. And I've tried for years to really find a practice that helped me. And so if it sounds, the stuff we've talked about sounds weird to anyone listening, I get it. I just want to say that.
It's very weird.
It is weird, right? And it's like, oh, I'm going to go sit on some lady's porch and chant. And I'm like, now to the place where I'm like, can't wait to go do that. But what I want to say is, if you are a person who has anxiety, who is processing anything, who has bumped up against some trauma because of all of the stuff we've been through the last couple years, taking time to breathe and maybe learn how to have a practice within yourself with your own breath is something that has truly changed my life. So if you're at the place where you're like, I don't know what I need, but I am open and willing, go try this and see if it's something that works for you. I highly recommend it. It has, like I said, changed my life. So,
wow. Amy,
yes, thank
Kelly.
You.
Beloved Kelly, so much love. I'm so grateful for you and your beautiful work in the world and sharing your bright light with all of our friends, with our community and beyond. So I appreciate you so much. And thank you for inviting me to this moment, to this time. So
thank you for sharing with us. I appreciate you being here.
Yeah. All right, sweetheart.
Okay. Bye, Amy.
Not for now.
Thank you guys so much for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Velvet's Edge podcast with Kelly Henderson, where we believe everyone has a little velvet and a little edge. Subscribe for more conversations on life, style, beauty, and relationships. Search Velvet's Edge wherever you get your podcasts.